Internet. I'm your husband, host Travis McElroy.
And I'm your wife, host Teresa McElroy.
And you're listening to Schmanners.
It's Extraordinary Etiquette.
For ordinary occasions. Hello, my dove.
Hello. Hello, dear. I almost forgot for a second that you say dove and I say dear. And I was like, what?
Oh, boy. See, this is what happens when we record so late. Oh, it's so late. It's 3:19 p.m.
More like it's just been a few days since I had my brain pills.
That's true.
Easter Monday. Is that a thing? I didn't know that was a thing.
Easter Monday.
Anyway, the pharmacy was closed, so now it's open and I'm better now.
Perfect. Also, speaking of better now, thank you everybody for your support in the Max Fun Drive. It was a great year. Had lots of fun, lots of great support. Thank you to everybody who became a member, who upgraded their membership, who boosted their membership, everybody who helped spread the word, everybody who watched streams, everybody who helped in whatever way they can. Thank you so much.
Yes, indeed. Enjoy those 600 hours of bonus content over this next year.
Okay.
I'll be giving quizzes.
Oh, boy. Okay, so we're back with another idioms.
Yes, indeed. This is our 13th episode of idioms.
13th idioms episode? That's amazing. Yeah. I love idioms.
And this is great because we love that everybody keeps sending them in. Because as long as there's stuff to talk about, we'll talk about it. Send it in.
I mean, that's true of me in general. As long as there's anything I can talk about, I'll talk about it. Okay, give me that first one. What's that first one?
Birds of a feather flock together.
Okay, so this is basically, I'm trying to think of it in like I've always heard it used this way. Mm-hmm. But basically, it means to me like people who act a certain way or like a certain thing or whatever tend to group up.
Yeah, totally.
Right? So you could use it either positively, like, these theater kids have found each other in this whole school. Birds of a feather will flock together. Or you could use it like, why is there always these three, you always see these three ruffians together? Birds of a feather.
Those miscreants will always find each other.
Exactly.
Yes, Micah T. sent this in. Thank you so much. And it goes all the way back to ancient times.
Wait, really?
Yeah. The first mention of like seeking like was recorded in the book of Ecclesiastes, the quote being, birds dwell with their kind. So it's a literal, natural observation that serves as a handy metaphor. And since Ecclesiastes was essential to both Hebrew and Christian holy books, the folksy phrase likely entered the public lexicon around the time that literacy rates in Europe began to rise. So once people started actually reading the books instead of having the books read to them, it spread a little further around. And, you know, the full English saying of birds of a feather flock together was first recorded in 1545.
I see. And when that was when birds started flocking together. Because birds read that and they're like, oh, that's a good point. Why are we keeping it? That makes a lot of sense. Because at that point, it was like you'd see penguins and ostriches hanging out together. Nah. They were stepping on each other, and then the penguins would be like, let's go swimming. And the ostriches was like, dude, I don't know what to tell you. Can ostriches swim?
Not true.
Can ostriches swim?
I don't think so.
Okay, but you tell me right now, if you were going to bet money on it.
No.
Say it's a 50-50 shot. Do ostriches swim?
They got the wrong kind of feathers, dude.
Okay. You're probably right, but I do need to look at that because I'm picturing it. And they got those long, graceful legs. Do ostriches. You can keep going.
Okay, okay. I think that in my experience, I've heard it more in the positive, that people who share interests and likes tend to come together than I have in the negative. But that's just me.
The Cincinnati Zoo, someone from the Cincinnati Zoo tweeted about this. And it's
about
maybe
birds.
About ostriches. Ostriches can swim, but it's not common behavior.
Okay.
And it makes me picture, like, if some other ostriches saw an ostrich swim and they'd be like, weirdo. What do they
watch,
do?
Watch
I
your
almost,
mouth,
I know, I almost
sir.
Did, but I didn't. what a weirdo. You know what I mean? And it'd be like, well, yeah, I mean, we could all swim. Yeah, we can all swim, but we don't do it. We don't do it. But look at Gary over there just swimming away.
I don't imagine it's very comfortable for them. Like I said, the wrong kind of feathers.
I guess that's true.
Hey, they here's another
look like big swans.
Here's another
big
idiom.
Ugly swans. Okay.
Just the necks. Third time's a charm, submitted by Anne M.
Okay. I know what this means, and I think I know where it comes from.
Okay.
Okay, so what it means is like we've tried it three times, and on the third time it'll work, right? Third time's the charm.
Sure.
What I think it comes from, because they talk in, I think it's in Macbeth, right? Where it says something thrice, and like they talk about it in the Dresden books about like casting. I think it's literally like a charm. You repeat a thing three times to cast the spell.
Sure, but probably before that.
Oh.
So seen in print, 1839, but way before that. In print, it was mentioned by Elizabeth Barrett Browning, who wrote a letter to R.H. Horne saying, "The luck of the third adventure, if proverbial." So, I mean,
It was so referencing it.
Yes.
Okay. Because you can't reference something as being proverbial if it's not already a proverb.
Right. Because it is already widely circulation, right? The number three is a sacred number in a host of religious traditions, all the way from like pagans who identify the sacred nature of earth, sea, and sky to the Holy Trinity and Christianity to a lot of different places, right? Mm-hmm. So three is considered powerful and also lucky. Interestingly, we see a similar origin with the superstition of 13 being an unlucky number.
I just said, wait, but I was
you
just...
You did, I know. Interesting, huh?
Now, but there is the... So is the 13 sitting down for dinner? I know it's like modern, right? In like the last 200 years. But that's like from... Early 1900s, early 1800s, or late 1800s, right? You know, where it's the idea, the superstition that if 13 people sit down for dinner, whoever gets up first will be the next to die.
Yeah. But indeed, it doesn't say immediately.
Well, no, but the next, it'll be the next.
It's just the next one, whether that's in 20 years.
But it just means like, Derek got up. The rest of us are cool.
Until Derek goes.
But then when Derek goes down, oh, no. It could be any of us next.
We should look into that. Here's another one. When in Rome, parentheses, do as the Romans do.
Okay, so this is basically like when you are somewhere, like, for example, say you go to a nude beach, right? This is not something you would normally do. But here... Why not do it when at the nude beach? Why not go nude, right? So then you would say, when in Rome, do as the Romans do. Basically, you are adapting to the customs of the location you're at.
Yes. Mel G sent this in. And that while that is true, the phrase is very old, again, often attributed to Saint Ambrose, who was a massive proponent of Roman Christianity in the 300s. He's credited with being the first person to attest that, quote, if you should be in Rome, live in the Roman manner. If you should be elsewhere, live as they do there. Okay, that's it's a lot longer.
Yeah, but I mean, I do like that is not only saying when in Rome, do as the Romans do, but then following that to its logical conclusion, which is, and then if you're not in Rome and you're somewhere else, do what they do there.
So wait, definitely... Your example of, say, the nude beach, right? Uh-huh. That is one way of using this phrase. But the other way is attributed to Romans historically were very quick to punish, especially anyone who broke the law. So a misstep in Roman society would quickly make you the victim of everything, maybe from like a public shaming to banishment or to worse, right?
Uh-huh.
Meaning that you know, the phrase could be used to justify behavior that you wouldn't normally partake in, but also a warning to act accordingly, lest you be punished.
Okay. Do as the Romans do.
Interesting.
Or else.
Here's another one.
Please.
Give up the ghost.
Okay. So this is when something's been, oh, I was about to say on its last leg, which is another idiom.
It's another one.
When something has been struggling for a while, like if you have a car that is breaking down, but you're able to keep kind of squeezing a couple more miles out of it, one more trip, and then when it won't work anymore, after being on the edge for so long, mm-hmm. it finally gives up the ghost. It's not when something suddenly breaks, right? It's when something has been kind of struggling for a while and finally stops working.
Or additionally, stopping doing something because you know it won't work, right?
I guess. So, yeah, use it as like, oh, let's just give up the ghost on this. Yeah.
Yes, okay. Yes. Because like that car that you said, after it, quote, gives up the ghost, you don't use it anymore because you know it won't work.
Yeah. But I think in both circumstances, yeah. it would be associated with like, listen, we've been struggling with this for a while, right? Whether figuratively or literally, right? And it might be like a problem at work that you, and it's like, you know what? We've been stuck on this one solution for a while and it's not working. Mm-hmm. I think we just need to give up the ghost.
And S suggested this one. And it can also mean to pass away, right?
I mean, sure.
Sure.
You give up your ghost.
That's probably one of the original ways that it was used.
Though I do like that image of like living is just tightly clinging to your ghost. And then, it's like, no, this is mine.
And you give it
then
up.
Then at the end you're like, okay, fine.
And this didn't set out to be a big biblical episode, but it does continue to arise.
Well, I don't know if you know this. That book has been very influential on American culture for reasons.
And give up the ghost comes specifically from the King James Version of the Bible. It is the description of how Jesus died in that particular edition. The exact phrasing is from Mark chapter 13, verse 37 is, and Jesus cried.
1537?
1537. Is that what I said?
Okay. I thought it was 13, because 1337 is lead, right? That's lead in gamer speak. So, like,
oh, whoa.
I was going to say, whoa.
No, 15.
It's all connected. It's like the Da Vinci Code.
And Jesus cried with a loud voice and gave up the ghost.
Okay.
I mean, we always mention the print.
Yeah.
The print kind of thing. Okay. Are you ready?
Yeah, okay. Always. But first, how about a word of...
You got me.
How about a word from another Max Fun show?
Thanks to everyone who contributed during this year's Max Fun Drive. We truly couldn't do what we do without you. With the drive in the rear view, it's time for another proud tradition, our annual charity pin sale. This year, the proceeds for the pin sale will support Vote Riders, a nonprofit dedicated to expanding ballot access nationwide. Members at $10 a month or more can purchase Max Fun Drive pins featuring shows from across the network, and all members are able to buy our network pin design, exclusive to this charity sale. The sale is live now, and it ends Friday, April 12th. For more info, head to MaximumFun.org/pinsale. And thanks again for your support.
From the twisted minds that brought you The Adventure Zone, Balance and Amnesty and Graduation and Ethersea and Steeplechase and Outre Space and all the other ones, the McElroy brothers and dad are proud to reveal a bold vision for the future of actual play podcasting. It's called The Adventure Zone versus Dracula.
Yeah, we're going to kill Dracula's ass.
We haven't recorded all of it yet. We will attempt to kill Dracula's ass.
The Adventure Zone versus Dracula.
Yes, a season I will be running using the D&D 5th edition rule set. And there's two episodes out for you to listen to right now. We hope you will join us. Same bat time, same bat channel.
Bats. I see what you did there.
Okay, now I'm ready.
Now you're ready.
Now I'm really ready.
This is one that I have not heard.
Dun, never.
Dun, dun.
You've never heard
never
this?
Never heard this one.
Okay.
Salad days.
Oh, yeah. It's when everything is going right and it's the best of times. And you're like, these are the salad days. Usually I think I've heard it in a retrospective form of like looking back, those were the salad days. Everything was going well. Everything was going smoothly.
Huh. Amanda suggested this one. And like you said, it can refer to the good old days or perhaps the youthful peak.
Sure.
And this is attributed to William Shakespeare.
That guy?
He used the phrase in 1606 in Antony and Cleopatra.
Oh, that's probably why we don't recognize it. Not a widely done one. Not a widely done one of the 37.
In the speech at the end of Act One, Cleopatra is expressing her regret over her youthful romantic dalliances with Julius Caesar. To express this, she says, "My salad days, when I was green in judgment, cold in blood, to say as I said then."
Okay, I guess that kind of makes sense. I've always been confused by it because, like, salad is not normally evocative of, like, rich and decadent times, right? Like, if you said champagne days, mm-hmm. I would get that, right? Or if you said, like, filet mignon days, I would get that.
I think that you have something here because Fowler's Dictionary of Modern English Usage says, whether the point is that youth, like salad, is raw, mm-hmm. or that salad is highly flavored and youth loves high flavors, or that innocent herbs are youth's food as milk is babes and meat is men's, few of those who use the phrase could perhaps tell us. If so, it is fitter for parrots than for human speech.
Yes, I agree with this. Also, knowing it come from Shakespeare, I can also give it an angle of, with our refrigeration and stuff, probably lettuce and fresh vegetables.
Oh, that's another good one.
We're probably quick to wilt, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you got
to
eat them while they're there.
And the difference being like meat, yeah, meat spoils too, but meat is like already pretty brown in color, right?
One can preserve meat a little better.
But if
as
you
well.
Think about like salted tomatoes, carrots, like these bright, alive, vibrant colors that very quickly brown and wilt and stuff. I could see that, maybe.
Yeah. Maybe. Here's one. Put a sock in it. Another one from Mel G.
Now, this is, be quiet, stop talking, right? Like, very, very easily, like, either somebody is running their mouth or they're running their mouth. Or they're, I don't know, they are kind of critiquing somebody or they're being sassy and you say, yeah, put a sock in it.
I thought for sure that this had something more to do with the kind of like violence of socking someone, like hitting someone.
Oh, really?
Put a sock in it means like, I'm going to put my fist in your mouth to stop you. Something like that.
I understand why you would think that, and I don't want, let's start with affirmations.
Okay.
I understand. Sock it to me, yeah, I'm going to sock you, absolutely. Now, when it comes to the imagery of putting it in their mouth, I'm going to put my fist inside your mouth is a wild leap.
Well, if you punch somebody, they're probably going to stop talking about what they were talking
about. Yeah, but I would never say, oh, you better watch out or I'm going to put a fist in your mouth. They would be like, what do you mean?
I'm going to hit you.
But I also, to be fair, wouldn't say like, I'm going to put a fist on your face in a strong and fast manner. I'm going to use a lot of words to describe punching.
So the theory is that this phrase actually comes from slang during the First World War, and many assume that it was because people would stuff socks into the horns of their early gramophones to quiet the music, kind of like a mute you would put in mm-hmm. a trumpet,
yeah,
right? And so putting a sock in it came to mean quiet down or be quieter, right?
Yeah, and that makes sense because, like, when I think of that phrase, it is very like 1920s, 30s, 40s. Yeah, put a sock in it, it'll be right. Like, yeah, I don't think totally. Of that as kids now. Like, if I was on the playground and I heard a 7-year-old say to another 7-year-old, hey, put a sock in it, I would laugh my face off.
To be fair, I don't know a lot of the slang that these kids are
I'll
using.
I'll tell
these
you,
days
it
anyway.
Ain't put a sock in it. I'll tell you that much.
What's with all this riz and skibbity?
Yeah, they would say put a skibbity in it. Hey, go skibbity yourself.
Put that down your skibbity.
Yeah.
Joke on it.
Put a riz in your skibbity.
Okay. Clean as a Whistle by Trace D. Or Tracy D? I'm not sure.
I mean, it's clean. Like, it's right there in it, but it's just like, usually, as one also might say, sparkling clean, zestfully clean. But it is like cleaner than clean, right? It is like, oh my God, so clean. One might also say you could eat off of it.
Yes, but this comes from a very literal thing. Back in the olden days, whistles themselves were carved from reeds or pieces of wood.
Yeah.
And it should have a very piercing, clear tone, right? Sure. But when it came to these original whistles, that piercing, clear tone took a lot of mastery to carve into your actual whistle. So like something like a small piece of debris or a few drops of moisture could easily change the sound of your whistle to make it, you know, not as clear. So clean as a whistle has to do with it getting that desired sound from being immaculately clear and clean.
What's interesting is I am now, the more I think about it, it's like my brain can't quite associate it with a specific imagery or scene or something, but picturing someone like cleaning the barrel of a gun, cleaning an instrument, cleaning even like glassware, something where it's mm-hmm. like you are cleaning an item, even one where you're cleaning the inside of an item, right? And then saying clean as a whistle, right? That it's not just like, oh, this room is clean as a whistle.
Unless it was completely bare, right? Yeah. That's when I would associate it
maybe
with clean as a whistle. Like if it was empty of furniture and rugs and lamps and all that kind of stuff,
yeah,
then I might describe a room as clean as a whistle.
But see, I would think of it as like, for example, if I was cleaning some of the tubing on like my aquarium filter, mm-hmm. right? I got it all the way clean. I would describe that as clean as a whistle. And so I think it makes sense that it is like associated with I'm cleaning something out.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah, makes sense.
Yep. Here's one.
Okay.
Screwed the pooch.
Such a weird one.
I know, right? I like the sound of it because of the
the
assonance. Is that what it's called?
Yes.
This was submitted by Ava M, but it still is quite evocative, right? Screw the pooch.
It's usually like you did something that ruined the plan,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, messed up.
Yeah, but not just messed up like, oh, you tripped, but like you kind of got in your own way or you fumbled the ball on that one. She like, or you did something in such a way that made it all go wrong. Like, say you were trying to do a presentation at work, and you inadvertently like made a joke in it that you're like, oh, this is gonna kill, and it ended up like offending the boss.
This is gonna kill. That's another one.
Yeah, and you ended up offending the boss, and you're like, oh, I really screwed the pooch on that one.
Yes, which I must assure our
audience. I don't like saying it.
That this does not entail any harming of animals. It's a euphemistic version of the original expression, which was...
Well, there's some censoring going on.
Censoring going on. Breed the dog and sell the pups, but a lot more, you know, slang-tastic.
Yeah, I understand.
And that was the more vulgar of the original phrase, which was feed the dog.
Okay, what's it mean?
It was popular in the 1910s, and it meant to say that you were being lazy or loafing around because dogs were often referred to signal laziness. And since it was an undesirable quality, feed the dog became breed the dog, which the phrase got slangified in World War II. And so now it means referring to blundering or making a public and humiliating mistake.
So wait, it was before breed the dog and sell the pups.
Yes.
So
screw the pooch specifically,
uh-huh,
though, wasn't until around 1979, 1960s in there, right? It became very popularized with the book turned movie, The Right Stuff, which was based on the Mercury 7 space program. So according to Tom Wolfe, screwing the pooch was 1960s NASA jargon. And it was included in this to make it more authentic.
Okay.
Though, that's hotly contested. Because radio DJ Jack May also known as Candied Yam Jackson. Never heard of that.
I like that, though.
claimed publicly that it was him who turned the breed, the dog, into Screw the Pooch. And he claims he started using the phrase in the spring of 1950 after he got into a friendly argument with his roommate, who was John Rawlings, a NASA engineer.
Turtles all the way down.
I know, right?
Okay. I guess I'm still trying to make sense how the phrase breed the dog and sell the pups was used.
Okay.
Was that like you would say like, oh, you really bred the dog and sold the pups on that one? Or was like, well, you know what they say, breed the dog and sell the pups.
I think that it's more that like you really went all the way down this bad path.
Got it. Okay. Yes. Okay. Okay. Now I got it.
Yeah.
You've spread this in the world kind of deal.
Exactly. Okay. Okay. Exactly. And this is the part of idioms now where we go through things that maybe your grandpa always said and you've never heard anyone else say in your whole life.
Like when your grandpa's like, I want to order an apple pie here. And we're like, Grandpa, we're at Taco Bell. And he's like, I don't care where we are. I would like an apple pie, please. And you're like, Grandpa, they don't have apple pie at Taco Bell. And he's like, I know. Funny, huh? And you're like, it's pretty funny. That happened.
Did it?
Yeah. My papa was sitting in the back of the car this one time. We were going through the drive-thru and we were at Taco Bell. And he was like, apple pie? And my mom was like, no, Dad, what? No. And he's like, I just want an apple pie, please. And then and in the back, he was leaning over to me and Justin and Griffin going, I know they don't have apple pie. And it was very, very, very funny to me.
Okay. Oh, man, your poor mom.
I know.
Here's one from Cameron. Hello. My fiance will not stop saying, it's a horse apiece. I have never heard anyone else say this, and I am convinced that they made it up. Please help. Is this nonsense?
Okay. It's ringing a very small bell for okay. me. I'm trying to, it's a horse apiece. I don't know what it means, though, but I swear I've heard it before.
It's very reminiscent of six of one, half dozen of the other.
Uh-huh.
Right? It means that two things are basically of the same value.
Oh, okay.
It dates back to the 1800s and actually has nothing to do with horses.
Oh?
It comes from an old dice game called Horse. And in this game, if two players each lose a turn, it was said that they were at a horse apiece because both had the same result.
But if two players both skip a turn, how can you tell?
I mean, guess lose your turn.
Yeah, but doesn't it just keep going for there? Or do they sit quietly for the length of time the turn would take?
I mean, it was to
think about what they've done.
Describing the event of both of you losing turns.
Okay, you lose your turn, I lose my turn, your turn.
I don't think it has to happen in succession.
Okay.
I don't think we have to both lose a turn.
Yeah,
and then the other.
I honestly can't imagine a scenario in which that happens unless I was playing and I play lose a turn on you and myself somehow. Like,
Uno just reverse. To speed things along. Uno reverse.
But you can't, but you've lost a turn, so I get to go again. But anyways, this doesn't matter.
Okay. Rachel C. wrote in several delicious idioms. Here we go. These are Latin. Idioms.
Ooh la la.
Fides Punica, translate to Punic Trust,
okay.
refers to the Carthaginians during the Punic Wars, who were a longstanding enemy of the Romans. Therefore, Fides Punica refers to the greatest treachery or faithlessness.
Okay. Never heard that one.
Rem Ecut. Tai-ti gisti, I think, literally means to touch the matter with a needle or hit the nail on the head.
Or put a fine point on it.
Oh.
Yeah?
Yeah. Here's one. Nuces relinquere, meaning to relinquish the nuts.
Excuse me? One more?
It's a common childhood game in ancient Rome. Which used nuts like one would play marbles.
Oh, okay. All right.
And it also means to cast off childish things, right?
Because
it's a kid's
give up
game.
Your nuts.
Yes. Here's some from August. My Tennessee dad used to say, I don't think I've heard these outside of my family. I was wondering if they have any history or if my dad just kind of made them up.
Uh-huh.
There ain't no getting the lid back on that can of worms.
The thing is once you get to can of worms, it's hard for me to be like, yeah, that's common or not. Because, like, open up another can of worms mm-hmm. is like you're opening something you can't, like, close again, right? Once it's open, we got to dive into it. We got to deal with it.
Yeah, the worms are everywhere.
The worms are everywhere. So there ain't no lid is, I think, just another iteration of open up another can of worms. Right?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yes, probably. I mean, because, like, once you open the can of worms, you have a whole other problem that leads to other problems, right?
Yeah,
you've opened it, and then the worms are everywhere. Then, I mean, you couldn't put a lid back on it. I think it's just an elaboration on that, probably.
Well, it's also two different. It's like a bookend of you can either say, let's not get into that can of worms, or let's not open up that can of worms before the thing happens. But once a big, like, this is going to be a big discussion topic is introduced, then you'd say, well, there's no getting the lid back on that can of worms, right? One is before the event, and the other one's after.
How about slicker than owl poop? Not well, using poop, but the,
yeah, no,
the alliterative.
Slicker than blank. Well, slicker than animal feces of different kinds. I've heard
yes, all kinds. But here's the thing,
I don't
right?
think it's usually owl though. Slicker than.
I mean, any kind of avian poop is quite liquidy, right? But
yeah.
Owl, I thought pellets were not liquidy.
Well, they isn't it bowls or something that they call where it's like the chunks of stuff?
Yeah, the pellets thing.
Slicker than, I'm trying to think of what I've heard, right? And maybe it is like pigeon, I've heard. But
maybe.
It's also hard because finer than frog's hair gets stuck in my head because frog's hair is so fine it doesn't exist, right? And it's finer than, how you doing? Finer than frog's hair.
So slick has a very interesting etymology. It was originally...
I think I just heard slicker than feces. Mm-hmm. I don't think I often hear, yeah.
It was originally a British phrase that meant someone arrogant or potentially a con man.
Yeah.
But in the 1930s, slick started actually being used for a synonym for smooth and glossy and shiny. So those were nice things, right?
I don't necessarily think those are two different things, though.
Oh, yeah?
Right? Well, because you could very much talk about slick as like a veneer, right? Of like, I'm not saying that they're not. I think that they are connected, right?
Yes.
Whereas just like if someone is a con man, right, then they usually have a slick suit. They have slick hair, right? Like this thing of...
They appear smooth and shiny.
Exactly, right? And so like I've always connected, like I've never thought of those as two separate concepts to be like, oh, that's slick, right? It's like, it's cool, right? That's very impressive. Mm-hmm. But also, like it's a cool trick is usually how I would use like, oh, that's slick, right? That's a cool trick. Not like, oh, you've learned math, slick, right? It would be like, it would usually be like related to something performatively impressive.
Okay. Now, what about the different types of poops? So we say like bull poop, horse poop, dog poop, right? Do these hold different connotations for you? For example, Alex said that... If she thinks about it,
yeah.
Bull poop is like bad information, right?
Yeah, but a lie.
A lie. Dog poop is like something broken, but maybe horse poop is something unreasonably mean or cruel.
Yeah, I agree. Like if I said, if something bad happened to me or something, I would be like, this is horse poop. What I'm dealing with right now, this is horse poop. But if someone lied to me, I'd be like, you're talking bull poop. You're talking bull poop.
Mm-hmm.
And if someone said, hey, do you want to buy this car? And it was all broken down. I'd be like, that car is dog poop. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah
I can see that.
Before she wrote that to me, I was like, no, it all seems kind of the same. But I think you are correct that they do have different connotations. And I don't know why, like, bird poop or owl poop or, like you said, pigeon poop feels slicker. I mean, I guess.
Because when it hits, it spreads out, baby.
But
that's slick.
If one were to step in poop.
That's why I think I've always just heard slicker than that.
Just
not with an animal in there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I also just think this conversation has made me think it's a shame that we don't teach profanity in public schools. Because there's a lot going on here.
There is a lot going on.
And the fact that our children have to learn that at home.
I know.
Oh, no.
Alex is asking now specifically if people would like to send in how they view the world of other poops. Like, has anyone heard as a lie called out as elephant poop, or is zebra poop a thing, or whatever?
Am I the only person who says bullcorn? Am I the only person who says horse apples and bullcorn?
Maybe.
This is bullcorn.
Send those in.
You know what? This is horse apples. I'm dealing with this. This is horse apples. Am I the only one who says that?
I don't know.
Okay.
Send those in to Alex at schmannerscast@gmail.com.
Because she reads everyone. Also, we want to tell you about our new, ours as a McElroy product. A streaming show called Clubhouse, me, Justin Griffin, hosted every week on Tuesdays at noon Eastern time over at bit.ly/MacroyYouTube, or you can search for Macroy Family on YouTube. We just did an episode with Ron Funches as the guest. It was super fun, and I think you'll like it. It's still up there. We also are still doing our video game streams there as well every other Tuesday, so check that out. Just search for Macroy Family Clubhouse or go to the Macroy Family YouTube. We also have new merch over the merch store because it's a new month. We've got a Taz vs. Dracula poster by Zachary Sterling. We've got a Rest in Peace Miggy Mackerel sticker, which you'll know from Clubhouse. We've got a wombat pin with dangling cubes of poop, fittingly, designed by Tricia Swinier. That's from a conversation Griffin and Rachel had on Wonderful.
Because wombats are wonderful.
And they poop squares, or cubes, excuse me. They're not just flat. It's not like flat. That would be weird.
Like Cheez-Its.
It's not weird. I guess it's weird that they're cubes too, but less weird than them being two-dimensional. 10% of all proceeds this month will go to the Palestine Children's Relief Fund. We also want to thank our editor, Rachel, without whom we could not make the show. As we said, thank you to our researcher, Alex, without whom we could not make the show. Thank you to you for listening. We could make the show without you, but why?
That'd we be would. Weird. I mean, we would
be so weird and lonely talking to the void. What else, Teresa?
We always thank Brent Brentelfloss Black for writing our theme music, which is available as a ringtone where those are found. Also, thank you to Bruja Betty Pennant Photography for the cover picture of our fan-run Facebook group, Schmanners Fanners. If you love to give and get excellent advice from other fans, go ahead and join that group today. As always, these idioms are completely submission-based. I mean, except for the ones that we write down ourselves.
Or that I think of in the moment, because I don't like writing things down, because then I can be tracked. I don't leave a paper trail.
So please.
I'm off the grid.
Continue to submit your idioms and your questions.
I might be the least off the grid person.
And your topic suggestions. And that email is, again, schmannerscast@gmail.com. Say hi to Alex, because she reads every single one.
And that's going to do it for us. So join us again next week.
No RSVP required.
You've been listening to Schmanners.
Manners, Schmanners. Get it.
Maximum Fun,
a worker-owned network
of artist-owned shows,
supported
directly
by you.